Welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Ponce, founder of Unlock the Magic, Coaching, Healing, and Magic School. I'm joined today with Dr. Nava Lee. Dr. Lee is the founder and CEO of Concrete Build Financing. Dr. Lee was also the CEO of a vocational school for 20 years, has over 20 years of experience in healthcare, and over 10 years in academia as an adjunct professor for various universities. Dr. Lee was a Governor Kemp appointed board member to the Department of Community Health. She is the vice chairman of the board of the Henry County Pregnancy Resource Center, Bridge Wellness South, a former Republican candidate for state Senate in District 17, and current candidate for Georgia Superintendent of Schools. Dr. Lee has authored several Christian-based books, including Stay and Fight and Be the Superhero of Your Story. Dr. Lee volunteers at Relevant, her local church, and the Joy FM as a prayer partner. She was a homeschool mom and a substitute teacher for a Christian school. She has been married to her best friend Donnie for 25 years, and together they have 3 children. Dr. Nava, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on, Amy.
My pleasure. How do you feel right now, the state of both healthcare and academia?
Well, to be honest, I've always been of the mindset that if you have complaints, you need to come up with solutions. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm running for office right now. So I believe that I have some good solutions to the dismal state of our public schools and healthcare. I've got a lot of opinions on healthcare as well, obviously.
I'm sure. You know, one thing that caught my eye during your bio was you're on the board of the Pregnancy Resource Center. And we know that right now in this time of place in U.S., the mortality rate of the maternal mortality rate is very high, especially amongst Black women.
That has more to do with the fact that the healthcare institution, when they go to give birth, they just don't take Black women seriously when they're complaining about pain or complications.
It seems like it's lifelong too, the narrative that women aren't listened to, and more specifically, Black and brown women are not listened to. And it's wild, the amount of us that have gone to healthcare providers with wanting to get answers and help and just more of the same, or in some cases, misdiagnosed or even, you know, never diagnosed and you die of said whatever. So, okay, it's bleak. Got it. Not to start out on something that's negative, but that's just something that caught my eye. And especially, I can't imagine being on a board of a pregnancy resource center and seeing the opportunities and challenges and being met with the system that is both operating exactly how it was designed and also very broken as it relates to who it's serving ultimately. So
Correct.
So what is Concrete Build Financing?
It's a company that's a crypto company, crypto coin, but it's backed by real estate. And started it really when I started seeing the influx of investment companies and private equity in the space of commercial real estate, specifically apartment buildings. So they come into Georgia specifically. It's been very hit by that. They come in, they jack up rates, they purchase these apartment buildings, jack up rates astronomically, and then we have a homeless problem because nobody can afford them. And so I believe that, yes, there's lots of government programs that are trying to solve for that problem for affordable housing. But I believe that private industry, the private sector also plays a role. And what I like to see is commercial properties, commercial real estate purchased for the purpose of converting them to condos. And then these condos, we offer them to individuals as a rent-to-own option. So I don't know if you're familiar with Divi, for instance. Divi does rent-to-own residential property. Very low entry, barrier of entry, because even the down payment is saved up throughout the rent. So you save up for your down payment with the rent. And then the person makes the decision once your down payment has been saved up, whether or not they want to move forward with the owning of that property or not. And so it allows them to have some stability as far as how much their rent's going to be, right? It allows them to have equity if they choose to become owners. And it does it in a way that preserves your dignity, right? Mm-hmm. If you are working full time, you should be able to afford your housing. And the goal is to make sure that housing is no more than a third of their income. And so, you know, we know that inflation has completely destroyed that. In many cases, people are paying over 50% of their income when it comes to their housing. And so we don't want that. That leads to evictions and ties really into children now having housing insecurity as well, right? All these kids that are homeless. Yes, we're addressing the issue of food instability with lunch programs and weekend programs, but what about housing instability? And that oftentimes it's even more to more of a traumatic event in a child's life.
So when you say commercial buying up buildings to create apartments, you're not talking about what we're seeing in other, like where big tech is buying up real estate, not that.
We want to purchase apartment buildings, convert them into condos so that we can sell them as a rent-to-own properties.
Right. And who would you say this serves? And is it local to Georgia or is it nationwide?
Georgia, but I believe the issue is starkest in the Southeast. So a lot of the Northeast, even where you're at in Chicago, you have a lot more rental controls and laws that protect renters. We don't have that in the Southeast. So yes, government has a role here as well. But if you go to any of these talks where multifamily people are looking to get into the multifamily businesses, they always tell you, go to the Southeast. It's so easy. Landlords have so much more rights in the Southeast. So we really need to protect people and renters.
So there's more rights for landlords. What is that? Like what kind of rights?
Well, let's just say that there are less rights for renters. And so it's very landlord friendly.
Okay. So what moves are you excited to be making right now?
Well, as you mentioned in my bio, I'm running for superintendent of schools. And two of my main initiatives, one of the reasons I'm running is to expand the Promise Scholarship Act. So we currently have a Promise Scholarship Act where parents can get vouchers, $6,500, but only for those that are in schools that are failing. Your school has to be in the bottom 25 percentile of the state of Georgia, and then only if you're currently in the public school system. So if you're, say, homeschooling your children, or if your children are in private school, you're not eligible. And I like to see that change. I personally homeschool my son through the fifth grade. He was on the spectrum and he needed his mama. And so I homeschooled him through the fifth grade and it was the best thing for him. And then we adopted a little girl from the foster care system in Puerto Rico. And when she came to live with us, she had a lot of learning gaps. And even though she started off in the public school system, we took her out and put her in a Montessori style school where she thrived. And it shouldn't be that only parents with means have those options. We should be able to give those options to every parent. And that is why I would like to expand the Promise Scholarship Act to 8,000, where you can use it in any learning environment. And I believe that parents will then be engaged and be able to provide their children with educational environments that suit that child. And that's my first initiative. The second one, as you know, I was the CEO of a vocational school for 20 years. And I can tell you that vocational schools are game changers to a lot of people. I myself obtained a vocational certificate the summer between my 11th grade and 12th grade in high school. And I was able to use that as a mini internship, right? Even though I was college bound, I was able to use that as an internship. And as soon as I finished my degree, it gave me a great job opportunity because I had that experience. And so what I'd like to see is every high school graduate not only with a high school diploma, but also with a trade school certificate. And as I mentioned, if you're college bound, it helps, right? But if you're not college bound, it's a game changer. It gives you a career, a way to earn income and have some purpose.
That's wonderful. The Promise Scholarship Act, you really nailed on something where your two children really needed unique
learning environments.
Yeah, unique learning environments. And for those who don't wish to homeschool or don't have the resources to, you know, whatever that looks like, every child deserves to be uniquely attuned to.
Exactly.
But the school system and the pace in which, or the copy paste approach that all of us likely grew up in, because whatever it is, like, you know, there's 27 kids in the class. Like, how can you uniquely attune to each individual every single day? I know that everyone's just doing the best they can, but how can we shift that a little bit more so it's not as copy paste and we can attune to each child without, I don't know, what's the medium?
That is why it's empowering the parents, because parents can be uniquely attuned to their child. It's very difficult for a teacher to do that with, again, 27 and 40 kids sometimes, you know, but a parent can do that, and they know what's best for their child. And if we give them options as far as different types of learning environments that they can choose from, they'll oftentimes you choose a learning environment that's best for their child. Not every parent is going to choose this, obviously, right? Because it requires effort. They have to drive their child back and forth at the school. Oftentimes, the voucher is not enough to cover everything. So obviously, there's going to still be the majority of children that are going to attend public school. All right. This is not decimating the public school in any way, but it is giving parents that absolutely need to use a different option. It's giving them the tools and the resources to do that. And at the end of the day, it's their tax dollars.
I'm reading a lot about the, I don't know if you want to call them gaps or like the trends happening in kids that learned over COVID or,
yes.
You know, what are you seeing in the kiddos that in their very formative years? And I mean, you could probably say that anyone K through 12, I don't know where you were over COVID, but there could be something over that span of time, regardless of what grade you were in when that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Is that being talked about, or is that a conversation of how we kind of catch up these kiddos, no matter where they were from a time where none of us learned like that?
Exactly. Well, some kids did fare better than others, right? Depending on which states. Obviously, if you lived in states where the shutdown was over a year, you'll see a lot more learning gaps than others. But we are seeing the gaps, particularly in the early ages. So for those that were preschool age and first and second grade, those were such foundational ages that it's very, very dire. We're seeing ongoing problems even till this day for those children. So yes, that is a conversation, and educators are very much aware. I believe that the answer to that is resources. More resources. I don't know about Chicago, but in the state of Georgia, over 50% of our budget goes to administration, not to the schools, not to the teachers, not to the students. We need to change that paradigm. Okay.
I mean, what I'm hearing you say is the top heavy. That's
very top heavy.
I was 20 years in corporate America. That's where everything is top heavy. It feels every industry is top heavy, where the trickle down effect is that's not a thing. And so to your point, and I'm like this too. Yeah, sure. Let's get passionate about what's not ideal or going wrong right now, but also let's get through kind of the passion and the rage to figure out what we're going to do about it.
Solutions. Exactly.
So it's like, I'm not in favor of just constantly talking about problems. Let's air them. Sure. Let's find them. Yes. And then what? That's why I'm a coach. It's like, we're not going to stay here. We're going to get going. So all of these, and I'm going to speak more broadly here and probably more toward what I've been seeing in like the business or corporate sector for a long time, the older generations that get frustrated really easily with the younger generations because they don't learn the same or do the same thing or do it the same way that older generations would. And so they get mad, or they'll say, you know, there's a big narrative right now that Gen Z doesn't want to work. Not true.
That's not true.
There's just a lot of that. So I worry about those kiddos that experienced a really big hardship over COVID, and people forget about that when they go later on to enter the workforce. And we're not, I feel, and let me talk as an elder millennial, I feel like millennials are one of the first generations that are like, absolutely not. No, thank you. Like, we're subscribing to all the things that came before us that don't feel good. And I'm hoping that my generation, when Gen Z or Gen Alpha comes up in the workforce, we do have that space to say, what do you need? Like, how do you learn? How can we make this fit for you? And there's some basics that some of these, I keep calling them kiddos because that's where they, but whether it be learning cursive or like having to sign documents and things like that. But there's a bigger piece like literacy gaps as well, right?
Very much so.
So again,
70% of fourth graders in Georgia are not proficient in reading.
70% of fourth graders?
Correct.
And is that because of their learning over COVID?
We can say that's part of it.
Part of
it. Yep. And 76% of eighth graders are not proficient in math. Those are 2025 numbers.
Mm-hmm. How do you catch up?
Resources.
Resources.
That's the way. We have to prioritize our children. So as I mentioned, the budget, the top heavy, that has to go. We need to make sure that by second grade, if children are not reading, that we are holding them back. We're not just passing them on, but then we are making sure that they're getting the resources for them. Every child learns differently. Yes, some are auditory learners, some are visual, but some are kinesthetic learners. Like, as I mentioned, my daughter, she needed a place like Montessori because it geared towards the way that she learned. And so we need to be attuned to our children and their needs and make sure that we're putting the resources there for them to learn at the very least the foundations. Mississippi, you know, they went from 50th up to top 10. And they did it by going back to the basics, phonics, you know, things that, you know, no more new math. They went back to the basics and they were able to improve their scores. It's not rocket science. We know what needs to happen. We're just not doing it.
There's something also around vocational, tactile. I'm actually running into a lot of women that have been executives. And of course, we know the 1 million women that were ousted from the workplace last year, 600,000 Black women. I've run into a lot of them and had conversations and they're like, you know what I want to do for a while? I just want to go do something with my hands, like something easy or something tactile that gets them out of the mental gymnastics or psychological abuse that they had been finding, because full circle, that same attunement that children aren't getting. We're all running around as adults now in the workplace and still no one's able to attune to us, or we're not able to have the space to kind of share back in a safe way. Here's how I learn. Here's how I receive. Here's how I thrive. Again, there's just not that discourse happening, I feel, in the mainstream workplace. And so we're seeing it, and it's going to continue to shift as there are different gaps over the different generations. But going back to basics, and some could say that's kind of vocational as well, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Vocational trades. That's where I feel like we're going to see this shift. Maybe in this million women that have left the workplace, like going back to something vocational. And it's not that basic. I don't know.
Well, you know, back in, you know, before the, I would say, before this whole push for college was the only answer, many people were given vocational skills, right? Many people left high school with vocational skills or with the idea of pursuing further vocational skills without having to go to a four-year school and get tons of debt, right? We're giving children these two options now: get a JOB that barely pays the rent, or get a degree and have a mortgage, you know, right after you're done, right? Because it's basically a mortgage. And oftentimes it keeps you from getting a mortgage because you have so much debt. And so those are two options. I'm simply advocating, let's give them a third option. And that is an actual vocational skill, whether it's a blue collar or not, because vocational skills are not only blue collar. We're talking about like coding certificates, you know, all of the certifications that you can get in the medical field, right, that do not require a four-year degree. So there's lots of different options for vocational schools. Yes, we still need the electricians and the plumbers and the welders. That's for sure, because especially as the baby boomers are retiring, we need to fill those positions as well.
It's amazing how with each passing year, there's less and less, who knows how to change a tire, who knows how to, like those, like even change a light bulb, turn the light off first. Like that might not be intuitive to someone, or like turn off the power, like, you know, how do you turn off the water of your house? Like if there's an emergency, things like that. When did the big push for college go? Because it had to predate. I went to college in 2000 and I didn't know why I was going to college. I was told I was like, oh, okay. And it still took me until I was 40 to figure out why I came here to Earth, like to figure out what I wanted to do. So it's like wild to me that I'm not suggesting that every 18-year-old doesn't know what they want to do with their life. I'm suggesting that most don't.
Correct. I'm in agreement with you. The big push started when, so the Department of Education started in the 80s, right? 1980. And prior to that, you know, most people went to vocational schools, right? Now, the Department of Ed, I don't know if you're aware, 60% of its budget goes to the Pell Grant. Back in the 1980s, the Pell Grant covered 70% of your college tuition. That included room and board. Now it barely scratches the surface, right? Like, it's a nice little thing to say, I got Pell Grant, but it does absolutely nothing. So everyone has to get in debt unless your parents were able to successfully save up for enough college. And here's the thing though, college tuition has outpaced inflation since the 1980s. And now, because of that push with, you know, the Department of Education offering that Pell Grant, I believe that that is where this whole you have to go to college thing really started, because it's just a racket, right? Now you're giving them free money, and now that's not even enough now to cover their tuitions. And the endowments of most of these colleges are astronomical.
I think all in, for me, $11,000 a year at the time, which fortunately it didn't accrue that much, so to speak. I was still paying it off well into my probably 30s, but it wasn't as steep as the mountains that people are climbing today, as you spoke about the costs. And it gave me an undeniable social growth.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out like what else.
Definitely, if you want to become a doctor, a lawyer, and please go to college, right? But not everyone, that is not the path for everyone.
No. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I certainly made great relationships. You know, I'm just trying to, it was awesome. Yeah, college was great. Awesome. But yeah, I, as it relates to what I quote unquote do now to earn a living, it's not what I went to school for. So.
Right. I would like to see us give more business skills as well. There's no reason why we can't prepare youngsters if they want to start their own businesses. And that, you know, is a great partnership with a vocational certificate, right? So let's say you want to be a plumber and also start your own plumbing business, right? So let's say you're not someone that's very handy or wants to work with their hands forever. Well, then start your own business, right? And that way you can be the manager, but you at least understand what it's all about. There's so many different options that we can prepare youngsters before they graduate high school so that they can actually have a chance of succeeding without getting a college degree.
Yeah, there's an organization downtown, Chicago Women in Trades, that actually has a facility where young women can specifically go station by station and try welding, plumbing.
I love it.
Just so many cool things. And I was involved with a friend last year who is creating a line of clothing for women in the trades specifically. And they were doing this big partnership together. And I think it's so exquisite because it gives young women a chance to see why it's cool outside of the male-dominated patriarchal industry once they get in, and misogyny and sexism and things like that. Before they get into like the harmful, they get to learn and try things out in a really safe space, which I think
that.
Is pretty cool. So, So Dr. Nova, what is something right now? You've talked about it in a few different ways, but is there something different than that you've already talked about that's kind of got you peaked right now? Like, there's a lot. There's a lot going on in our country right now, but is there something specifically that you want to get out there that really chaps your cheeks?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm one that I'll scream at the news often. So I try to not watch as much news because it does raise my blood pressure. But really and truly, the reason that I'm running for office, and I've mentioned this, is because I don't want to stay there. I don't want to stay in a position where all I'm doing is complaining and asking why, rather than, okay, let's figure out how. How can we change this? How can we make differences that are going to affect, that are going to impact everyone, or many at least, right? I'm just one person, but I believe that every one of us has the ability to make a positive difference in our neighbor's lives. It doesn't have to be through politics. You know, it could just be through volunteering. It could be through, you know, community organizations. I could give you a laundry list, honestly, Amy, of things that he can, things that boil my blood pressure. Okay. I'll give you a small one that's very Georgia specific. We have what we call the Hope Scholarship, and it's funded by the Georgia Lottery. Now, many youngsters, when they get this Hope Scholarship, they go to college, and within 1 to 2 semesters, they are off the scholarship because they're not meeting the requirements. I think that's preposterous. It, to me, is bait and switch at its best. So most of these youngsters whose families funded the lottery, who funded this Hope Scholarship, are then kicked out of it. I think we need to change that. Two things that I recommend to change that is, the first is to make the entry requirements can still stay the same, but once you have the scholarship and you go to school, then we need to lower the requirement for maintaining it. Just bare minimum. If you're able to pass your classes, you can stay. You know, none of this, you know, have to have really high GPAs, because again, freshmen, sophomores, they're not in the mindset to really focus, right? The first 2 years.
No, I got my first F's
Right, in
Like
college.
my first couple, I was like, what's going on?
Exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like a wake-up call. MIT has really high standards, but when they go to college, when they go to MIT, the first 2 years, they don't grade them at all. And so,
Yeah.
yes. And so, we need to lower the standards for maintaining that scholarship. That's number one. And number two, I want to have like a star system where parents can know which colleges are going to better nurture their youngsters throughout. And so that they're using that scholarship wisely into colleges that are going to allow their child to graduate with that scholarship. So for me, again, I think it's typical bait and switch to say, yes, Georgians, you're funding this lottery so that we can send youngsters to college with this Hope Scholarship, and then the majority of them are losing it within the first 2 years, which means that if they want to stay in college, they're not taking out loans.
I was gonna say, what do the students say? The ones that get pushed out of the program, like, what are they saying about it?
They take it personally. They think it's them that failed, but no, I think it's the system that failed them. And so that's one of the things that I believe that I can push for change. Obviously, the first changing the requirements is not really something that the Georgia Superintendent of Schools has power to do, but we definitely can set up that star system. Now, I have a very loud mouth, so I will definitely be pushing for that to happen as far as reducing the maintenance requirements for that scholarship.
And to your point, it does take all of us right now on any degree that you have capacity for to create what you want to see in both your surroundings and the future. And I do understand a lot of people just don't have the bandwidth capacity, whatever it is, on a daily basis to give more toward the social collective. I get it. And personally, I feel it starts with your own personal energy. What are you willing to tolerate or withstand every single day on any degree? And is there any way that you can navigate differently so that you can show up differently for yourself? Because that's actually the how, quote unquote, that we create the change we want to see, regardless of what it is. I feel like it starts within, and to trust yourself that you're really trying or doing the best that you can on any given basis. I don't feel that anyone should be forcing themselves to get involved in a way that doesn't feel unique or authentic to them, or that they don't have capacity for it, because then it just brings in more of the same old. So, what would you say to someone who really is, and you noted this, like you have a good boundary of when to turn off the news when you need it, but for those who are really drowning in the state of the state, regardless of where they are in the world, I guess, what would you say to the person that really is feeling that desperation of wanting to stay involved and aware, but also because they're so involved and aware, they're not able to actually experience any change because they feel like they're trudging concrete.
Well, I can tell you, if you're feeling fear and anger, those are counterproductive emotions to making any change. Yes, it helps to have a little bit of it, but if
Like,
that
feel
is
it. Yeah, feel your feels. Yeah.
right, but if that's all you're feeling, you're not going to do anything because it does keep you stuck. You have to feel hopeful for the future to want to make a change, to want to make a difference. And that is why I limit the amount of news that I watch. I limit my social media. Believe it or not, you're gonna find out what's happening in the world. People are gonna tell you. You can't, open up any type of media without getting a little bit of what's happening in the world. But don't just, consume it hours and hours and hours because it will keep you stuck. Second thing, and I learned this back in 9/11, actually. My son, my firstborn, had just been born. He was just a few months old when 9/11 happened, and I remember feeling so hopeless. Just absolutely distraught. I was like, what kind of world did I bring my child into? And I remember going to work and my boss at the time, because it was just like this feeling that was just not going away, like 2 or 3 weeks, and I was still feeling that way. And she said, why don't you volunteer? And I thought, how does that have anything to do with, what I'm expressing to you? And she said, you just try it, just find someplace that you're passionate about, volunteer. It doesn't even have to be that much, just maybe once a month, and it'll make you feel better. So I tried it. I took her advice and I started volunteering. And believe it or not, it did lift my spirit. When we give back, believe it or not, we get back. Right? It's just the law. That's how it works. And so I would recommend anyone that's feeling like hopeless, turn off the news, maybe go on a news fast and start volunteering at whatever capacity, even if it's just 1 hour a month, 1 hour a week, whatever you can handle, but it's going to give back. It's going to let you realize, you know what? Humanity is worth fighting for. And it's just going to make you hopeful again.
You know, I agree with that. Because when I was feeling, you know, 3 years ago, when I said today's my last day from feeling into like a very toxic work environment, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, how I was going to take care of myself, I didn't know any of that. And also, and I'm starting to feel it again, so this is an interesting tidbit for me. I feel a visceral sadness when I see animals in natural disaster or war zones because they have no one. And one could argue, I'm not suggesting that every humans have a direct line to people that can help them, but in the context of animals, animals don't have a direct line to anyone to take care of them. And especially if they've lost their pet parents or, you know, in a war zone or something like that, and suddenly they have no access to food, water, safety, shelter, anything. And I feel like a very visceral, like my gut and my heart hurt right now as I'm saying this. That is an invitation for me to go do some volunteer work with the local shelters around here and spend some time with some animals so that I can feel connected to the animals that are in need, because many of the animals that I see reported on are across the world and I can't get to them necessarily. So that's one way that I could feel and regain a little bit of hope toward the collective souls of animals, of creatures, of nature. That's a way to reconnect myself personally.
And you'll be doing a service to humanity as well, because I've gotten all of my pets from shelters.
Same.
And I think it's, you know, if we didn't have workers, a lot of them would be euthanized because there's just nobody to take care of them. So I think, so you're taking care of them until someone comes along that can adopt them. So
babies. Babies. So anyway, as we start to wind down, where can we find you and support your work?
Yes, thank you so much. So my website is drnelvalee.com. That's drnelvalee.com. And my website, podcast interviews are there. My books are there. My links to my books, my links to my social media, everything's on there.
Wonderful. Closing remarks as we wrap up.
Well, I can tell you, I'm looking at all the posters that you have behind you, and they're very inspiring. I was trying to focus on your face, but also was looking at that. And I can tell that you're someone that pours into people. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for this amazing interview.
Thank you, Dr. Nelva.